This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:48, Thursday, the 14th of July, and of course you're listening to The Morning Run. Now, according to the Financial Times, two Petronas subsidiaries in Azerbaijan have been reportedly seized by bailiffs after a French arbitration court ruled in March that Malaysia has to pay the purported descendants of the Sulu Sultanate at least 62 billion ringgit. Now, these seizures were part of a legal effort launched in 2017 by the Sulu descendants to receive compensation over land in Sabah that their ancestors leased to the British in 1878.
So, the British Daily reported that bailiffs in Luxembourg seized the holding companies estimated to be worth more than 8 billion ringgit on behalf of their clients, which are the heirs, on Monday. However, Petronas did release a statement after the news broke, saying that the seized assets have previously been divested and the proceeds duly repatriated. So, Petronas' views that the actions taken against them is baseless. According to a statement by the de facto law minister, Dato' Sri Wan Junaidi Wan Jaafar, the Paris Court of Appeal has allowed Malaysia's application for a suspension order to temporarily halt the enforcement of an arbitration ruling.
So for some clarification on the issue and maybe some background on why this is happening, we have on the line with us Boon Negara. He's the convener of the Sabah Malaysia Study Group, an independent group specialising and researching on the history of North Borneo and Sabah. Good morning, Boon. Always good to speak to you. Could you walk us through this, the history of this issue? Exactly what do these heirs of the Sulu Sultanate want from the Malaysian government?
Well, the issue goes back over 200 years, actually, in 1878, when the Sulu Sultanate at the time, it existed at the time, purportedly sold North Borneo at the time, now today Sabah, to a British company. Before the British company, passed the territory to Britain and then became self-ruling from Britain before it became Sabah that joined Malaysia. But at the same time, the same territory actually had been owned by Brunei. The Sulu people knew that, admitted that it was originally Brunei's, but they claimed that Brunei gave the territory to Sulu. But until today, Brunei does not admit that. It never was passed to Sulu. Now, after the territory from Sulu, was passed to the British company, after it had actually been passed to that company by Brunei, the cession payments were paid annually by the British company as a kind of formality. So eventually, when Sabah became part of Malaysia, Malaysia agreed to a request by the Sulu descendants to continue with the annual payments of 5,300 ringgit on condition that they did not harass Sabah or any part of Malaysia over anything. But in 2013, as you know, when the Lahad Datu incident came, a group of them from Sulu actually launched an armed attack on Sabah. And from that point on until now, Malaysia stop paying the annual cession payments. Now, what their complaint is, essentially, is that since 2013, Malaysia failed to uphold its agreement, its end of the agreement to pay Sulu the annual payments. So, and this is where they are very inconsistent, because while their lawyer earlier this year said, well, in March, when they first took this recent and current action, they are not pursuing the issue of the claim to the territory and so on, but only they want the unpaid cession payments to be continued since 2013 plus interest. Yet at the same time, they are demanding more than 60 billion ringgit from Malaysia when the unpaid amount, even, however you count it, until now is only less than 50,000 ringgit. Even with interest, it doesn't amount to anywhere near to even 1 billion ringgit, let alone over 60 billion. So this is where they are inconsistent. And historically, the Sulu side has always been inconsistent in their claims as well as unreasonable in their demands. So that's where we are today.
So when this issue broke out in March, our Law Minister, Dato' Sri Wan Junaidi, told Parliament that the appointment of Spanish arbitrator Gonzalo Stampa had been revoked and the claim was no longer valid. So how is it still possible for the bailiffs in Luxembourg to seize these assets then?
Well, it's, you know, basically a matter of chasing time. You know, they have been trying to get what they want from one country after another. Originally, they had apparently tried to get their demands through London, through a British court, but apparently the British foreign minister told them that, you know, this has nothing to do with Britain. You know, they should go in there and go back to Malaysia to demand what they wanted. So that did not satisfy them, so they went to Spain, and the Spanish court was about to come up with a kind of award, but Malaysia acted, and you know, the award that would have been was nullified by the court in Madrid. Then they, before that nullification, they had moved the action to a Paris court in France, and you know, Malaysia acted again to suspend that award, and you know, so before the action by the Madrid court to nullify the award, they had already taken the move to Paris. But it was pending. Malaysia's application to suspend that action was pending in the Paris court, but they knew that was about to happen, so they moved the action to the Luxembourg court, apparently. And this just last Tuesday, when their lawyers in London said that they had, you know, obtained a bailiff's action in Luxembourg to seize the two Petronas subsidiaries, that same day, last Tuesday, the Paris court had actually agreed to take up Malaysia's request for suspending the action, and was suspended.
So what's next, though? It's how does our government respond to this, and can we then actually expect to see more seizures of government assets overseas?
Well, apparently, you know, since last Tuesday, when the Paris court agreed that, you know, the action would be suspended, it suspends any such action in any country. As far as the 168 countries are concerned, at least, in what is known as the New York Convention, under which this action seems to have been taken, including Luxembourg, you know, all these actions would be suspended. So right now it seems to be just hanging there.
But how does it get resolved in the longer term, though?
Well, we have to wait and see, because right now, you know, doesn't seem to be anything that's moving. They may do what they want, or they may claim whatever they want through their lawyers. Mm. But right now, they are not getting anything.
And then what should our Malaysian government do in turn, then?
Well, right now, it's a matter of for the courts to decide. And even if it went through, let us say, in the Paris court, Luxembourg court, or whatever, the fact that this was brought under the New York Convention, it technically nullifies it, because the New York Convention allows for arbitration action and any award arising from that to a private commercial agreement, which is not the case in the case, you know, when the agreement between the Sulu Sultanate and the British company was concerned.
I mean, the cost for the claimants to file their case in one court after another in Europe must be extremely exorbitant. What do they think their chances are? Are they even recognised by the Philippine government? And subsequently, where is this going to... Are they so sure of their success that they can launch something like this?
Well, apparently they have some kind of source for this kind of funding. But as far as the Philippine government is concerned, more than one cabinet minister in Manila has said that this is a private matter. This concerns previous Philippine governments. Now, as you know, the Philippines has just had an election with a new government, and we just have to see where their position is. But as far as previous Philippine governments are concerned, this is a private matter. Since the Sulu Sultanate no longer exists, the so-called heirs of the former Sultanate, which is now defunct, are just private individuals and commoners trying to make a case for themselves as private individuals who are citizens of the Philippines and no longer have any power or authority from the Sultanate of Sulu that is now defunct.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you for your time. That was Boon Negara, convener at the Sabah Malaysia Study Group, explaining to us the situation. And I would have to say, it is very confusing. It involves history, a lot of history. And then when we fast forward to the future, legal cases in Europe, actually, they keep moving from one jurisdiction to another jurisdiction to get the out. These are, of course, the Sulu Sultanate heirs moving from one jurisdiction to another jurisdiction within the European courts to find an outcome that they want. And they succeeded somewhat in Luxembourg, but apparently Malaysia has stop these proceedings, or at least they have gotten what they want from the French courts. So at the moment, it's kind of a stalemate. Checkmate or stalemate? I'm not sure which is the better word.
And it's not a cheap undertaking to do something like this, though.
No, but they want 63 billion ringgit, right? So maybe the lawyers have agreed to pro bono.
And Boon did say that he knows that they are being funded by someone.
Well, we watched this space very closely because it is extremely interesting anyway. But up next, we've got the Breakfast Grill where Shazana Mokhtar is going to speak to Mahathir Aziz. He's the CEO of Malaysian Digital Economy Corporation, otherwise known as MDEC. Up next, of course, the 8 a.m. News Bulletin. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.